WEEBY 108, Connecticut's best music variety. It's Alan Lamberti, and we've got a very special show coming our way Sunday night, August 25th, to Norwalk, playing the District Music Hall. It's One Night of Queen, performed by Gary Mullen and The Works. And on the line with me right now is the man I just mentioned, Mr. Gary Mullen. How's it going, Gary?
Very good, thanks.
I always like to start off when I'm talking to an artist, when I'm talking to a performer, where are you calling me from right now? Because we know you'll be in Connecticut in about a week and a half, but where are you today?
Yeah. Right now, I'm in Florence, Kentucky.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, for somebody that's from Scotland originally, is Kentucky, is there any similarity whatsoever?
No. especially the weather, I mean, it's probably about, 96, 97 degrees here right now. We don't get anything near that in Scotland. So for us, it's a bit of a shock when it comes to the heat. But apart from that, all good.
Well, hopefully it'll be a lot cooler by the time you get to Connecticut. But, summertime is summertime. There's only so much that we can do.
Exactly.
Now, you've got quite a story. You were a computer technician, and now you are the front person of one of the world's foremost Queen, I'd say a tribute act, but it's really sort of a recreation act as well. How did that come about?
It was basically a TV show appearance, which was a show called Stars in Their Eyes, which my mother and my wife applied at the end of one of the seasons to the sort of contestant hotline. You would call in and they'd send application forms for the following year. So I knew nothing about it. They filled it in, sent away a tape of me singing at a friend's karaoke, and didn't tell me anything. They thought, well, if he doesn't hear anything, there's no point telling him. And then I got a call from the network saying, can you come for an audition for the show? And I was like, what show? What audition? And that was it. I went, won the entire show. And this career started off the back of that, which was nobody more shocked than I was, to be honest.
So obviously your family, they knew you could sing and you sang karaoke. But had you done any singing prior to just doing karaoke? When did you know that you could sing like Freddie?
Well, my family were all singers. My mother was a great singer. My uncle, who was one of my heroes, was a great singer. He was a guy at parties who would bring the guitar out and hold court, and I thought, I want to be that guy. That'd be kind of cool to be able to do that. So I was always singing, and I was always encouraged to sing as a kid because it was just music was everywhere in my family growing up because it was a big family. And then teenage years, John, the drummer in our band, and I actually started our first band when we were both teenagers. He was still at high school. I had just left high school. And we were doing rock clubs, and he was going into school the next day in his uniform. He was actually too young to play the clubs, but like, don't tell anyone you're 15. And so that was my kind of first introduction into sort of what being in a band and singing. And then I got married, had kids, and the dreams of sort of, being a rock star kind of went, put them to bed, and go to karaoke's and jam nights and things. And that was pretty much it until this show came along, and that was pretty much ground zero for this whole career starting.
Now, when you were in this band, was it all originals? Were you just, just high schoolers? And well, you were a little bit after high school, but you were just creating originals, or did you do a Queen song at that time and sort of started doing it live a little bit then?
We did a bit of both. We did a lot. We were sort of more like a heavy metal band, but we'd throw in like things like Time All the Down and We'll Rock You, the fast version, and the kind of more rockier Queen tracks. Because people would request them. Hey, man, you sound like Freddie. Can you sing this song? And I'd be like, yeah, whatever. And just kind of sing it because I enjoyed, because I'm a fan anyway, and I love the music and I love, Freddie and the band. And it just kind of went from that where we'd always do one or two, because we were all Queen fans, we'd always do one or two Queen songs in the set when we were doing our own stuff. And it became kind of half covers, half or maybe three quarters covers on their own original. Because when you go into a bar to play and you're playing your own stuff, this is a song you wrote, people are like, yeah, whatever, give me another beer. Whereas if you play a cover, you've got them, So that was kind of the thinking behind it. But it was always, Queen was always somewhere in the band's DNA.
Were you ever able to see Freddie Mercury live in person?
I never did. I was 13 when they did the final tour in 86, and my buddy and I were doing a collection of odd jobs, you know, delivering newspapers. We lived in the country. We were down the local farm, you know, sort of shoveling out cow sheds and all sorts of ridiculous things to get the money. By the time we got the money together, the tour was sold out. And it was just like, you know, the kids today don't know the struggle. They can just go on Ticketmaster or whatever online and can buy a ticket. Back in the days when you had to write away for them or call or go to the local ticket outlet and stand in a line and wait for them. By the time we'd done it, it was sold out. So I never got to see them with Freddie. I got to see them with Paul Rodgers in 2008, and I went back as Brian May's guest, which was that Wayne's World Alice Cooper moment. You know, we're not worthy. It's one of them, but he was such a nice guy. He was just staring at me and their old bass player. These two guys with their eyes wide open, just staring at this guy like he's God, you know. And he's just like, "You guys okay? Did you enjoy the show?" And we're like, blown away.
And I would imagine he probably saw at least footage of you performing. You know, you were on TV and videos have gone viral on the internet as well. But, you know, you don't resemble Freddie in your normal life. You really have to turn into him.
No. It is like I call it the Clark Kent Superman moment, you know. or like Kiss in the 70s when nobody knew what they looked like under the makeup. It's got kind of that thing, which is great because I've seen me do a show and go for a late dinner somewhere and be sitting with people wearing T-shirts, my face on them, talking about the show to tables. I mean, they've no idea who I am. And it's great. I like that anonymity moment, you know. But then I get random things, like I flew into Tucson last year and the actual guy at customs, the customs guard, had saw us the year before and asked, could he get a selfie? I just got off the plane and I looked the way I do all the time and I was like, what? I thought he confused me for somebody else, but no, he'd been to see us before, and he's like, "Hey, man, love the show," and I was like, "All right."
That's funny. And now, the next thing I'm going to bring up, you mentioned that, you know, you could wear the T-shirt, you could go out and everything like that. Now, I have seen footage. I never saw Freddie myself. I have seen footage of him on stage. Yeah. Oftentimes, he would take his shirt off. I would think you've got to do things like that to recreate what he did. So, one, How do you stay in shape on the road to be able to keep doing that?
Well, I don't drink on the road. You know, I like a wee glass of wine from time to time, but when I'm on the road, I'm like, no, I'm not drinking. So that keeps me, you know, keeps the voice and keeps the brain in order. And I try and watch what I eat. I go to the gym because, you know, Fat Elvis, yeah, Fat Freddy, not so much. and the costumes are pretty figure-hugging and, you know, so you've got to keep in shape. And people say to me, you take your top off so you can show you're in shape. No, I take my top off because I'm absolutely dripping with sweat because it's a workout. Running around stage for 2 hours is a good bit of cardio, you know. So yeah, so I do, you know, look after myself, you know, go power walks, go to the gym, you know, stretch out, look after the voice and everything that you know I can do to keep myself moving pretty much.
One of the clips that I thought was fun, and I guess it was either, it might have been the first time that you were on TV, you know, part of the bit was you had, you know, Freddie Mercury teeth made, and, you know, it was too much to talk to and sing with, and I think everybody can understand that.
Yeah.
But my question is, in between songs, if you're chatting with the crowd, you know, Freddie did have a very distinctive way of speaking. Do you also do an imitation of his speaking voice? His singing voice notwithstanding, but his speaking voice.
Yeah, it's kind of, I can approach it like an actor in a movie or a play. You know, you've got to be someone else and you can be yourself, but people in regards to the best tributes that I know kind of embody the character on stage so that, and it's creating a moment in time you'll never see again, you know, with Freddie and McQueen. So we try and do the full experience. So I'll change how I speak and this whole, you know, darlings and that stuff, you know, and rock and rollers and all the kind of things he would say. And I love the interaction with the audience because it is an interactive show. It's not a sit down, watch for 2 hours, clap your hands and leave kind of show. You know, we say to the audience, you know, you better tune up your air guitars. You better get your head banging head ready. If you want to go dance and have a boogie, we actively encourage audience participation because Freddie was like, the show is the entire audience plus the band. It's not just the band performing. We want people to sing along and lose themselves in the music because the songs were so incredible. And we have, take me out of the equation, we have a world-class rock band. Our guys are incredible. I mean, all of our players are just next-level good. And I sit at soundcheck with a coffee and listen to them play and think to myself, I pay money to see these guys. Me out of the equation. So we're trying to give that entire experience of everything, the sweat, the lights, the costumes, the music, to be as exciting as possible, because you've only got 2 hours for that one audience and you've got to give them everything you've got. And if somebody leaves and doesn't like it, I'm sorry, we don't have anything else to give you. We've given you the you know, everything, including the kitchen sink.
Well, it sounds like an incredible show. Now, this is the 40th anniversary of the Works album. Now, the band obviously is named after that. Is there anything special you're doing with that, or more songs featured from that particular album?
Well, we're trying to recreate. I mean, I would say 95% of the tour songs on this tour is based on that. So the intro is the same. You know, and a lot of, you know, there's a few songs from that album, you know, like Hammer to Fall, I Want to Break Free, things like that, that were the big hits from that tour, or that album in Europe anyway. And it's a tour they never toured America with. So we're trying to show the American audiences this is what it's like. So it's a recreation of the lights within our budget and the costumes and the music. And it's again, putting people in that place and time and saying, right, come with us on this journey of all these songs. You've got the big hits like Bohemian Rhapsody and We Will Rock You's and the staples that you always will play. But we try and throw a few deep cuts in there for the diehard fans and then keep changing the set. So anyone that saw the show anywhere else in Connecticut, for example, last year, that's going to come to Norwalk and say, well, I've seen it. You've not seen this show.
That's interesting. Yeah, they didn't perform. I mean, really, they didn't perform in North America all that often to begin with. But yeah, it reaches even before Live Aid. They had, that was the last time they performed in the United States. There was a number of years and several, you know, a couple of big European tours before. Last time I think we saw them, they did come to New Haven in 82. And that would have been it. That was it. That was the last time.
Yeah, I think with Freddie, I think there was such a backlash in the Midwest from the Want to Break Free video because they were in drag.
Oh.
That was a parody of a soap opera in the UK. And Freddie just sort of went, you know, I'm not going back until we have a hit. I'm not going back to then have to push hard to get that level that they got with the Game album, because the two big hits off, the two number ones, was Crazy Little Thing Called Love and Another One Bites the Dust. So they were riding on that wave of, you know, sell out arenas. And then when that song came out in the backlash, Freddie just kind of went, I'm not going back until we get another hit. And of course, he never came back, because by that point he was ill, and that was that.
Oh, that makes sense. I've never thought of it that way, but that makes a lot of sense. It's unfortunate, but hey, at least we're going to be able to see you coming up Sunday night, August 25th. And I got to ask, what did you think of the movie? What did you think of Bohemian Rhapsody?
I enjoyed it. I mean, as a fan, because the guys always say I'm a total anorak, which I suppose I am. I mean, I've been doing this for just short of 25 years, and I've been a Queen fan since I was like 5 years old, so I'm a bit of a fan. I loved it. I loved Rami's portrayal. I loved the other guys. I thought they were great. Chronologically, it was a bit mixed up, and there was a few little, you know, Hollywood whippy licenses thrown in for good measure. I thought the Live Aid footage was incredible. I mean, it was like, if you could put the two clips together of the actors and the band side by side, they're spot on. I mean, it's goosebump stuff. It actually gives me goosebumps just thinking about it now. It's like those guys really, really got those characters and just went for it. So what we found on the back of that is the amount of young kids that have discovered Queen. You know, I mean, it's incredible. We've got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year old kids coming with mums and dads and grandparents or first-generation Queen fans. We have entire families turn up. We have an entire family in California, almost the whole front row. And I said, is anyone down here related? And they all put their hand up. And I was like, oh, right, okay. It's like that, is it? And it literally was like mum and dad, brother, sister, and then their kids, and then their kids, and then their kids. And it's incredible to see rock and roll. You know, people say rock and roll is dead. Rock and roll isn't dead. You know, I went to see the Foo Fighters back in Scotland before I came here, played to like 70,000 people. The place is bouncing. Rock and roll isn't dead. You know, the music, that music will continue. Beatles, Queen, you know, even things like Elvis, Frank Sinatra, these are legends. These guys will just keep going and going and going and going.
Well, it's going to be an awesome time when you bring the One Night of Queen show, Gary Mullen and the Works, Sunday night, August 25th, the District Music Hall in Norwalk. Tickets available, districtmusichall.com. Gary Mullen, it was really a pleasure to speak with you, and it's going to be a great show.
Thank
and congratulations
you.
On all your success.
Thank you. We're going to have a lot of fun, and I hope the audience do too.